From the Lean Enterprise Institute in Boston, this is the WLEI podcast, where we share stories of people making the world better through lean thinking and practice. For more information about LEI, including how we can help you apply lean thinking, please visit lean.org.
Welcome to another episode of the WLEI podcast. I'm your host, Matt Savas, and today we're talking quality in product development, in particular, the automotive industry. Joining me is Jerry Ford, Vice President of Quality at Lucid Motors, the EV startup. With over three decades of experience at companies like Ford, Rivian, and now Lucid, Jerry has a unique perspective on leading quality in both established automakers and high-growth startups. We'll explore how product development impacts downstream manufacturing and supply chain. Jerry shares lessons learned on collaboration across functions and balancing speed with quality, and she offers insights into building a culture of quality. These views and opinions expressed by Jerry are solely her own and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Lucid. This episode is part of LEI's Design Brief series, where we discuss principles and practices around lean product and process development, otherwise known as LPPD. And this month, we're featuring a slew of content on the issue of quality. Head over to lean.org to subscribe to the monthly newsletter. Let's jump in. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Matt.
We always start these things off with just some background about our guests. So let's start there. Jerry, can you tell us about who you are and your background in industry?
Yes, my name is Jerry Ford. I am currently at Lucid Motors, but I have an extensive automotive background directly out of college. I've been in the automotive industry for over 30 years, spending the majority of my time with Ford, with a small stint at Rivian, and now, like I said, at Lucid. At Ford, I was fortunate enough to have a wide, varied background, everything from manufacturing to quality into lean manufacturing, ended up even in purchasing. So that cross-functional background has really served me well in terms of just my overall automotive progress.
Yeah, so our conversation here, Jerry, is part of a series that LEI is putting together called the Design Brief. It's focused on product development. And the specific topic that we're covering this month is quality and the influence of product development on quality. You can speak to how product development impacts downstream, especially. So supply chain manufacturing, and as engineers develop designs and freeze those designs, what does that mean? What are the knock-on consequences for the folks who actually have to build the thing that they've designed? Can you speak to what sort of influence the product development teams have on quality when it comes to manufacturing and supply chain?
Sure. First of all, let me just say product development has a huge influence on the downstream effect of quality. I would also like to just comment, everybody plays their part. Everybody has significant roles across the value chain in order to produce a quality process and product. But I think it really starts with product development and some of the feedback loops from manufacturing, supply chain, et cetera. I mean, let me first just start out with the basic. At every vehicle or every product build, I mean, one of the things that's paramount is safety and wellness of the employees putting that vehicle together. So ergonomics in terms of how both the process and product are designed is essential foundational element that starts with our design group understanding how the operator is impacted by every single part that you may put on that vehicle. So ergonomic practices and principles within the design are extremely foundational. After that, if you really think about it, as it goes to the supply chain and even within manufacturing, you need design for manufacturing. You need the process to be capable. So that give and take and that collaborative, and I use the word intentionally, collaborative nature in between design and supplier, design and manufacturing, is essential. so that once again, design is and engineering is able to do the things they need to do, but understanding that impact and taking in those considerations, whether that is to, once again, maybe error-proof, make it easier for the person to get the part on the vehicle, or if it's a very difficult process. And, I mean, it's important to understand that overall process capability so that you can have a, I guess, stick to our tack time, produce as word as it's expected to produce. So that tight collaboration between those parties are absolutely essential. And the one last piece I would also mention is we've all take our cars in for service, whether that be a routine maintenance or potentially a fix. So understanding that design for serviceability is essential. You don't want to have to do unnecessary things when you're actually servicing the vehicle. So once again, that feedback, that collaboration, those evaluations are sort of essential up front in the design process.
So it's interesting how you describe that, because what you were talking about there is less about designing a product and more what Jim Morgan, LEI, refers to as designing the value stream. So the end-to-end process for the customer that actually doesn't end when it's shipped to the customer, but even the serviceability of the product once the customer is using it. But that collaboration that enables all that to happen, it can't happen by accident. It's not an ad hoc sort of thing. There needs to be some structure around it to make it effective. What do you think is critical to enabling that collaboration? How do you develop a system where it becomes just the way people work versus sort of how it accidentally comes together?
I think there's several things, but it comes down to that key balance of having the right process defined up front, or I call them maybe either design principles, or I think just some of those critical to quality processes that we must do. First of all, I mentioned at the beginning, it's lessons learned, feeding back the lessons into the process so that they're embedded in the process that you have is quite essential. But if you look at some specific tools around design for manufacturing principles or design rules that we may have, you could also look at things like our design FEMAs and our process FEMAs. And then once again, you get to the disciplines, which every automaker knows is in our testing and verification of our product. Is that process capable of delivering to that design intent? So having those formal process disciplines in place allows for that feedback loop while, once again, we're building in the lessons learned to actually enhance that on a regular basis for continuous improvement.
So process discipline combined with a product development process. And
Absolutely.
Well, it's interesting that you used the term several times, lessons learned. So twice you've signed up to work at startup companies, EV companies, Rivian, and now Lucid. Previously, you were at Ford. I would imagine, when you're at a new company that hasn't, well, Rivian now has, so both companies now have vehicles on the road, but I would think when you first joined Rivian, they hadn't produced anything yet out of the factory. And so there may not have been many lessons to learn from, or people were coming from so many different companies, they may have had all different kinds of lessons that they wanted to contribute to the making of a vehicle. Can you speak to the differences of trying to, achieve a great product with great quality at a legacy automaker like Ford versus a startup company like Rivian or Lucid where you're at now?
Yes, and there are some differences between those. However, I also want to say both have great strengths and then both have some key challenges. And if you look at if I break it down to between like if I think of people and then the process and then the tools you use, if you look across the board, let's start with even people first. Like I said, that's sort of foundational. A lot of people at the legacy automakers have been there for a while. So they have executed those processes. They know the roles quite well. They've grown up in that environment. So that tends to run a little bit more seamlessly just because of the nature of those people have been together or those organizations have been established. The flip side on a startup is you have a lot of people with great experience, but their experience and their process are a little bit different. So how you work together, and once again, that collaboration, because what I may call an item may be a little bit different than how you defined it at your company. So getting that alignment together and that collective experience to go toward a common goal is a huge strength at a new startup, but it also, you have to have that alignment session up front. You can't rely on those core processes that are already established for that individual company. You have to sort of develop your own identity as a team. And then if you go to the, like I said, that sort of builds into processes and tools. They are not going to be as, I don't know if robust is a good word, but maybe ingrained. The processes aren't as ingrained in a startup. There's processes there. There's people that are, but there's still a lot of role and responsibility definition as you're running very fast toward, you know, getting your product out. So I think, and sometimes tools are not as robust. Whereas in a legacy environment, all of that is, you know, has sort of been there well and are in fact quite legacy.
So what would you say is an effective way to achieve that alignment? Because I would think, especially, you know, Rivian, Lucid, these are high profile startup companies with, you know, the mission, I would think, attracts a lot of people, talented people from companies of all sorts. And you might be working with people not just from great automotive companies like Ford, but maybe tech companies like Apple. And so you have all of these really smart people who probably have tons of know-how, capable know-how around how to develop a product. And they may be really stubborn about the right way to go about it. But like you were saying, you do need to define a process and align around it. You know, what have you seen work to help build alignment and, you know, a real sense of team or a way when you have lots of really capable, smart people in the room?
First of all, the advantage I think that a startup has is that they have a very common goal. They have not built up the functional type of objectives, so to speak. So their goal is cross-functional. Their goal is they're building a new company. They're building a new product. They're building new processes. So I've seen the people at the start in the startup environment. You use your collective experience for a common goal. Yeah, there's some forming and storming, you know, that you have to do within that. But there again, cross-functional, focused on a common goal.
Not purpose. People have a sense of purpose.
Absolutely.
So like I said earlier in how we kick things off, you know, we're trying to, you know, address the topic of quality in a series of content this month. And you know, something that we've been talking a lot about internally is not just the technical parts of achieving quality, but the kind of mindset or leader behavior required to achieve quality. What do you have anything to say about that, Jerry, when it comes to the sort of, I hate to use the word culture because I find that to be, you know, too broad or generic of a term, but the sort of behaviors that you want to see or you try to exhibit vis-a-vis quality?
Yeah, let me use two words. I am going to use the word culture, and the other one that I'm going to use is a characteristic. If I look at the quality organization or a quality leader, the very first characteristic that I would expect in myself is objectivity. I need to be very objective. I need to see the data as the data. I don't need to be in functional type of issues. I need to be able to see the data and make the appropriate call and decision and assessment based upon that. And I think that's a very important foundational aspect. I also think that there is a cultural piece to this that I think is very important. And let me just list off a couple of things that I think that are important maybe to build that culture, or I think that is very important. First of all, I think everyone has a shared ownership in quality. I don't think it's a functional organization that delivers quality. We just talked about the impact on the supply base, the impact on, with design. Everyone has a piece of the shared responsibility for quality. Also think it's very, very important from top to bottom, side to side, however you want to say it, the data and the feedback from our customers need to be very visible. People need to understand the feedback loops from whether it's an internal customer or external customer. There's a couple other cultural things that I'd like to mention that I think are important. Surfacing the issues, a culture of surfacing the issues, having a mindset of risk management, having a mindset of fast resolution, effective containment. I think another one is having a mindset or a culture around maintaining strong, the right controls, right? And being reactive to that. I think those elements build a culture. But for the leadership personally, I still go back to having a very objective mindset so you allow the data to tell you what you need to do.
Well, why is that so important? As objectivity as opposed to what? Why is that so important?
People can tend to see quality issues as blame or that they've done something wrong. And we need to take all those as lessons learned and have a spirit of improvement. And we want to, we want to fix issues, fix mistakes, error-proof elements. That's our goal. But as things happen, you want to foster the environment of identifying so you can resolve and take out that any kind of fear that may be in the culture as it exists.
I can imagine that's hard to do because especially when quality becomes a catastrophic issue, we're seeing that now at Boeing in the automotive world. You know, it happened a lot of recalls last year, record recalls across multiple automakers. So how do you balance that, you know, creating an environment where people feel it's okay to surface issues, or not even okay, but a responsibility to surface issues, but a sense of urgency around addressing them. How do you create that environment?
Well, I think first of all, you never take your eye off the ball, right? One of the things with all companies is there's 1,000 different priorities, right? So there's things that require your attention at different times, but there's also foundational elements that you need to keep a pulse on at all times. And I think having a good quality cadence of how you review those controls, how to review issues, how you monitor those is important. And then that's a very foundational element. I want to go also back to like the leadership behaviors just a little bit. How people respond to issues is also very crucial for setting the tone within the organization. If the answer is who before the what, then it sets maybe the wrong culture. And you want, once again, you don't want to have recurring issues and things. I don't want to send the wrong tone. But at the same time, when things do happen, how an organization responds is actually can be a strength if it's positive.
So you said earlier, you know, a company, they can have 1,000 different priorities. And so it can become easy to take your eye off of certain things. What do you think causes a company to do that? How does that happen? What are some common fault points there?
I mean, my easy answer with that is there's only 24 hours in a day, right? All problems aren't easy to solve. And maybe you have this problem or this project or this going on that are all competing for that same 24-hour day time slot. So once again, going back to just some of the principles of how you build your time and data management to where you keep a pulse on things while major projects are going, how you keep on certain things within a major project so that you keep a pulse on it throughout, are some things that you can do. Strengthening communication, right? Working as a team, leveraging that experience, helping keep people focused on some of those key priorities are all different things that can be done.
Do you see different relationship with, not relationship, but the way quality is seen between legacy versus startup automakers? And I ask that because, you know, if you're Rivian, if you're Lucid, maybe the problem isn't such a big deal now. Rivian has got plenty of money, especially after the IPO. But in certain cases, you are racing to get somewhere so that you do have the capital required, especially in the auto industry where you need colossal amounts of money to mass produce a vehicle. And so there's a race to get something out the door, but you need it to be great because it's your first instance of touching the customer. And so if it's not great, you may be dead on arrival. So how do you balance that? The need to get somewhere very fast while achieving something great, which it appears Rivian, the product reviews are spectacular. People say the truck is the most capable truck they've ever driven. The SUV gets all kinds of great reviews, but how do you manage that pressure to balance speed with quality?
So once again, I mentioned at the very beginning, one of the distinct differences is you've got a conglomeration of people, especially in the startups, that come from a lot of different areas. Well, they bring with that a lot of experience. And one of the benefits of those people, I think, is they know what good looks like. So while you've got a mix of having a base foundation of processes that you are maybe not quite as, you know, once again, definitive or robust as maybe a legacy, you are bringing in a collective experience of people that have very specific skills and they do know what good looks like. So they can help course correct with that, once again, that collaborative team in order to drive those disciplines in.
Mm-hmm. I did get into a Rivian recently, and something that was immediately evident was it felt like it was more software than hardware from the driver's perspective. The amount of digital technology, even on the wheel, it's interesting. You don't have buttons on the steering wheel. There's just two buttons, and their function changes depending on what you're doing. I still drive as standard, and so I still feel very connected to my vehicle physically. It's got three pedals and everything. Actually, with Rivian, you don't even need two pedals. There are two pedals, but you only need to press one because of the regenerative braking, which is pretty cool, by the way. But, you know, cars are getting so complex when it comes to the integration of software. Even I think the hood of the Rivian could only be popped with, I don't even think there's a latch. There probably is. There must be a latch somewhere. But everything felt like it was driven by software. Does that make it more difficult from a quality perspective, the integration of hardware, software? How does that impact things?
So I would say as as many challenges as there are with the introduction of the software and the complexities and the hardware-software compatibility, there's also probably just as many benefits in terms of like the over the air update, right, for the customer and things like that. So there's give and take. So if you sort of step back and you go back to the basics for just a minute, you know, so now you're bringing in another dimension between software and hardware, but this is just where you go back to your process basics, strong validation, strong coordination, a strong manage the change process to where you're validating those changes for the compatibility, you know, across both now software and hardware. Software works and releases a little bit different than hardware. So that integration and that collaboration is extremely, you know, important. So like I said, it's much more complex, and you're bringing a whole new set of experience, well experienced people, even into the automotive. Once again, there's things to learn on both sides. But I think it has just as many advantages as potential challenges throughout its introduction into automotive.
Well, I would like to ask about that, the sort of lessons learned, people on the manufacturing side versus people on the software side. Those are two very different disciplines. And software development, for better or worse, known for the sort of go fast and break things approach. Hardware, you don't have that luxury because, well, it's a lot more difficult. You can't just pop into the computer, edit the code. I'm not oversimplifying things. Of course, software development is much more complicated than that. But, you know, tooling up a factory is very different than developing a code base. So what sort of lessons learned have you seen? Hardware learning from software learning from hardware?
Well, first of all, they have to coexist, right? Mm-hmm. Processes have to be adapted to both, whether it's timing overlays, processes of how we communicate or the collaboration, and is this affected? Does this affect this? Does this affect this? And what testing and validation is required on both sides? So that, once again, that tight communication, that tight collaborativeness is very essential, whether you're talking in the upfront development element or downstream. The other thing I want to point out that I think it's, I mean, these are some obvious things, but I thought they were very interesting at the time, is software is also not a physical thing exactly. Yeah. So, you know, we're used to dealing with parts and all that. So even your systems and your processes have to adapt to like a virtual type of part. The other thing is when you get down at the, let's just take an assembly plant level, the skills that you may have in repair or in validation, whether it's in service or in the manufacturing plant, you may have to enhance your skill set in this technical software arena for any kind of diagnostics, et cetera, to be able to do that. It's not your traditional resolution of a hardware type of thing. So it has elements across the board, from supply chain to design to manufacturing, that, like I said, are quite interesting, having come from a legacy environment where software was not as prevalent in my major time back at Ford.
I do want to go back to that connection between the factory and development. And it goes back to something you said at the very beginning, which was... you're talking about even helping engineers understand the requirements to build the vehicle. And you were talking specifically about the physical demands on a person to build a vehicle. How do you develop that, I don't know if empathy is the right word, but understanding, you know, what's necessary? How do you build that sort of feedback loop in between downstream supply chain manufacturing processes and the engineers who are developing the vehicle?
Well, I think there's a couple ways. So this is maybe opens up a door a little bit, not exactly within the quality realm, but very, very, very much related. And that's around our cost, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason I say it that way is when we have to take more time to do things, when we have to do rework because of processes that may be difficult or incapable, or we have to have replacement of people with due to ergonomic types of elements, those are elements that hit the bottom line. So cost is always something that there's a common, element across all parties in terms of that, where we have to drive competitiveness. Now, that's not to say that quality can't stand on its own, because I definitely think that it can. And one of the things that within almost any company I've ever been in is, how do you do the go and see? How do you help engineers see the physicals on the line? How do you leverage your processes in your early build stages for them to see and then take that feedback loop? We can document those issues. We can look for design opportunities. There's a lot of things you can do in a virtual build scenario that can help identify those things early up in the, in the process. But if you just take that concept of go and see, that's a huge element, so that we're striving toward good ergonomic stations as well as like good process capability.
Mm. So sort of back to basics, go and see, and try to understand what's actually happening.
Yeah, and ongoing things can happen, after things launch and all of that. This is where I'm going to go back to that lessons learned. How do we document that? How do we get that fed back in, so that we can, once again, just keep that continuous improvement cycle going for both manufacturing as well as design in our supply base?
Mm. I'd like to ask you about, you've been in the industry for a couple of decades or so, Jerry, and so you've probably seen at least a couple generations come up, and things have changed, not just the complexity of the vehicles, but maybe how people are working, especially with COVID completely blew up everything, although things are starting to go back to what we used to call normal. Do you see a difference in how a new generation of engineers are approaching work? And is there anything that you think leaders need to be cognizant of to get the most out of a new generation of workers?
So first of all, once again, there's strengths and challenges, whether you look at the legacy environment or whether you look at today. If you take a legacy viewpoint, you can think of it would be unheard of to start a new car company and get a product out in the time frame and what some of the companies have been able to do. Likewise, some of the startups don't want to build in that legacy mindset or that it's got a weighted up heaviness. But at the same time, there's a lot of things that are done quite well. And it does come down to the people and the processes. So here's what I see in like some of the generational differences. One of them is, okay, first of all, the one that always comes up is like the work from home, right?
Yeah.
And in any situation, that there's times I think that you need to give people flexibility and have that remote activity. And there's times that you need to be inside the workplace and working and getting to know people. So I think that's a key difference. And once again, I've seen people work that very well to where that's a strength, and you can then provide people flexibility and you're making strides. And there's important times to have that collaborativeness where it's face-to-face, one-on-one at the product, et cetera. So I think finding a balance in there between the generational differences that we see there is important, just finding that balance. But another area that I've seen a big change is in the data, and with the newer generation coming in, we had very legacy systems. We even used pagers at one point. So you see a difference of spectrum in terms of communication, the data. You see now a lot of the data accessibility, what they can do with that, how they turn and use the data very quick accessibility and an assessment of that. So I think that's it's a very interesting perspective of how they use the data to get to a problem definition. Whereas I think some of the others, our data systems weren't quite as robust, and you probably leveraged a little bit more experience there. And once again, I think in both environments, it's a balance between the two that really can make whether it's a legacy system, a legacy company or a new company, very effective is the balance between the two.
So I guess we'll wrap things up with just one more question here. You know, the auto industry has been changing rapidly the past few years, with particularly electrification, and you know, autonomy isn't there yet. Although Google says they're getting pretty close with their robo-taxis zooming around San Francisco, and you know, you've been part of that. Working at Rivian and now Lucid, you're helping create the future of the automotive industry. But what would you say are sort of the biggest questions out there about what lies ahead for auto?
Oh, that's a tough question. One thing I can definitely see, and not so much from my perspective, but maybe from friends and family, is the automotive industry is very right in the middle of all this going on. The general public, and like I can just go back to like my family, if I'm going to use that example, but you know, they're not in this day to day. So I think just the learning and the understanding of what's coming, why. That's all. Everybody's going to be a little bit nervous about going into, you know, to these areas. So I think there's a large education that needs to take place as we go for EV, the automate, you know, more autonomous vehicles, etc. There's a big thing that we need to do from an education, not only infrastructure, but I think those things come together with the technology. I think that we can move ahead just like we've done in so many other innovative things within, you know, the United States outside of automotive. But I do think those things are still at the infancy stages right now that need some attention.
I will say it's one of the few times I've felt old is when I was in that Rivian and I was like, how do I work this thing? And funny because the owner of that vehicle is you know, he's a bit older than me, and so he was showing me the ropes about how to operate that thing. And it's not difficult once you get the hang of it. You know it's, you know, you turn the wheel, it goes left, it goes right, you hit the pedal, it goes forward. But there was quite a bit to learn when it comes to the charging stuff, although, you know, it's learning curve.
You have a wide spectrum of people, you know. So
that's true.
So yes, it's I do think there's a bit to learn.
But well, I appreciate you joining me here on the podcast, Jerry. It's been fun talking to you, and yeah, I guess best of luck creating the future of this industry at Lucid.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
I'd like to thank Jerry for joining me here on the podcast. If you enjoyed the conversation and are interested in learning more about how to improve quality in your company's product development process, head over to lean.org and subscribe to the Design Brief. I put the link in the show notes. And thanks to you all for listening.